Welcome to Fermentality. I'm your host, Kat Pierce with Atlantic Brew Supply, and we're homebrewers talking homebrew and sharing fermentation. Okay, cool deal. All right, well, today our guest is John Welsh. John Welsh is from Sanford, North Carolina, and has been an Atlantic Brew Supply customer for 8 years. Welcome, John.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Yeah, so John, you are our first guest on our podcast, so thank you so much for being the guinea pig.
I'm honored.
We're really excited to have you on. You've been shopping here for a hot minute, and we just wanted to, you know, essentially get our listeners to maybe see what it would be like for a home brewer that has gone from legitimately bucket to brew house.
Okay.
So you are a home brewer and have been shopping here for 8 years, but how long have you been home brewing?
I've been home brewing for about 11 years.
11 years. Okay.
Cool. Yep. I started after I had a traveling job. I visited California, went to Russian River Brewing to see what all the hype was on their Pliny the Elder, and I got to North Carolina and couldn't find it. Sent an email to Russian River, and they responded with a recipe.
Oh, wow.
And I got ingredients and stuff and started brewing, and the first one wasn't that great.
And, you know, that's pretty normal for anybody that starts brewing. I know my first beer miraculously turned out pretty good. It was a rye IPA for my dad.
Nice beer.
And that's a recipe that I've still been, you know, working on since the very beginning. But second beer, I tried to do I think it was just like a Belgian blonde. And at that point in time, I didn't realize how much the yeast was incredibly important. And so I just used like an American blonde yeast, but I ended up getting so much diacetyl in it because I just rushed my
butterbeer. Yay.
Yeah. Yeah. I ended up just rushing my fermentation and I was like, well, it tastes good to me. And then everyone was like, Kat, this is not right. So, I mean, that's part of the process of home brewing is,
well,
just,
you want friends that will give you an honest opinion, because I've got so many that I could put bleach water out there and they'd be like, oh, this is great. Good job. Yay. I want to hear what's wrong with it.
Yeah.
And so many people are too polite to tell you what's wrong with it. So having a lot of people taste your beers, you're going to get that really down to earth. This and this and this needs to change. And you know, I can take all that to heart and make adjustments. And then other times I can go, well, that guy's awful. I'm going to keep doing this. Yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, ultimately that's also what this podcast is all about, is bringing in people who have been doing it for a while and hearing what they have to say and getting your experience and your knowledge in it, so that way we can share with others. So my first question actually was, you know, how did you get into home brewing, which you already answered, but what was it about home brewing that made it stick for you? Like, what was it about home brewing that fascinated you and got you to continue brewing?
So, like I said, my first brew attempt was not excellent or really good, but it was beer. I mean, everybody knew it was beer. It foamed up in the glass like beer. It was kind of neat that I made this in my garage, and it really gave me an idea of, you know, I could do this better. And every time I would brew something, I would go, yeah, I could do this better. And it was just that bug got into me that, you know, well, to do this better, you're going to need temperature control. And to do this better, you're going to need to propagate yeast. And to do this better, and it just became more and more and more. And I really enjoyed the trip. And, you know, I can still brew good beer in a bucket. My system's a little advanced right now. And I could brew good beer in that just as well. But I really liked the fact that anybody could do it. And anybody who enjoyed beer could, you know, go, well, this time I did this, next time I'm going to try this. And if you did small batches, you could drink it all yourself and never have to embarrass yourself in front of anybody.
Yeah, I started out doing 5-gallon batches. And with the first couple of batches that went awry, I definitely got to the point where getting through that 5 gallons was really difficult for me. And so there was some dumped beer because it ended up just sitting in the fridge because I didn't drink it.
I drank too much beer that should have been dumped just because of pride. And I could say I never dumped any beer. I've dumped so much beer now. Oh my gosh. Because it'll come out bad and I'll be like, No, no, that's not happening.
Life is too short to drink bad beer.
That's a very good point.
So, well, that's awesome that you specifically mentioned that, you know, you can make good beer in a bucket or in a spike system, right?
Yes.
You know, sometimes it gets to the point where I really just don't feel like cleaning my flex fermenter. And so I'll literally just ferment in a bucket because I don't feel like cleaning the flex fermenter and all of the itty bitty parts.
Yeah, I'll do the buckets when I'm trying a beer for the first time. That way, if I really mess it up, I'm not throwing out 15 or 30 gallons of beer. I'm throwing out 5 gallons of beer. And a lot of times what I get out of the bucket is superior to what I get the first couple times out of the big system. And it really makes me want to chase that first time again, you know. And but yeah, for like did a Bavarian Amber for a friend and did that as a 5 gallon batch and got pretty good at on the big system with it, but it started out as a 5 gallon batch just for a gift, and it was so yummy that I had to do it again and again.
Well, you know, it's funny because you talk about like the 5 gallon bucket as your pilot batch, and you know, most homebrewers are just doing 5 gallons. I don't know that I'll ever get bigger than that just because I'm afraid of like drinking it all. But that also being said, you know, you mentioned that you have a larger system. So tell us about your equipment. What is your system now and how did it evolve from what you have now to, you know, or how did it evolve from where you started to where it is now?
Okay. Let's go with the system first. On the hot side, I've got a Spike 30 gallon hot liquor tank. A Spike 50 gallon mash tun and a Spike 50 gallon boil kettle, gas heated. The hot liquor tank is a Bayou Classic burner. The boil kettle is a Blickman Hellfire 2.0. Recently upgraded the hot side with a valve and motor system, so I don't have to dump buckets. It really, really makes a big difference. Don't have to pick it up and dump it out and pick it up and dump it out.
Mm-hmm.
Plus it looks really great. In the cold side, I've got 2 half-barrel spike unitanks and 2 full-barrel spike unitanks. My temperature control is a 7.5 cubic foot deep freeze that I've modified to hold the chilling coil from an air conditioner. Holds about 70 gallons of coolant that right now is at 22 degrees, about a 60-40 glycol mix. I run that through a back counterflow chiller to chill my boil after I'm done, and goes from 180 to 55 in no time flat.
Wow.
And the thing that got me to do that was I keep reading that, you know, while it's cooling is the biggest time for infections. I don't want cooling time. I want it cold now.
Yeah, I unfortunately, as a home brewer, have no patience. My grandmother actually used to say all the time, I have all the patience in the world God ever gave me because I've never used any of it. And that was actually the inspiration to.
I love that.
I know, right? So I actually use that as the inspiration for my first mead that I ever made. It was called Mead for Patience. because I really, really hate waiting and I want to be able to drink this right now. And, you know, mead is one of those things that you've got to wait a hot minute for it to, you know, condition and clarify and be ready to be able to perceive all of those flavors that you really want out of it.
Definitely.
Awesome. So that's the system that you have now. What did you start out with, like on your first day? What was it that you started out with?
I started out with the Brewer's Best Starter Kit. It consisted of a 5 gallon plastic bucket, a 5 gallon plastic carboy, a graduated cylinder, a hydrometer, and a regular old thermometer. And that was about it. Oh, it had a big plastic spoon. Don't forget the plastic spoon.
The plastic spoon. Awesome. All right. So with all of that being said, now that we've talked about your equipment and what you've got right now and what you started out with, what is one piece of equipment that you cannot live without?
The glycol chiller.
The glycol chiller.
Yeah. Temperature control is everything. I do a lot of lagers and I don't want to be limited to wintertime brewing for lagers. I want to be able to enjoy my Mexican lager on a hot sunny day and it's not going to wait around for me. So I need to keep it at 55 degrees when it's 90 outside. And that really, really, temperature control is the biggest thing that I've put into the system that I really enjoy about it.
Awesome. So that being said, there are a lot of folks who call the shop and ask, hey, where can I get glycol? Where do you get your glycol?
Amazon.
Okay, I didn't realize that Amazon sold.
I purchased 1 gallon containers and 5 gallon containers from them. Actually, it popped up in my feed the other day, and it was like, "Look, 5 gallons for $169." I'm like, "Man, I paid $200 3 months ago. What the hell?"
And unfortunately, prices have just been raising everywhere. I mean, you know, even just simple things like grains. You know, maris otter, for example, has gone up a little bit. Well, you were talking about temperature control, and I know that you brought a couple of lagers here. So, how do you feel about opening up one of these bad boys?
Yeah, let's do that. Let's start with, I've got an oak-aged American lager. This was the last extract beer I ever did on the bucket system. My children came out to see what I was doing when I was removing the grain sock that steeps the little bit of grain before you add the concentrate. And my little one said, "Ew, it's sock water." So this beer is named Sock Water.
That's awesome.
Let me open one up and we'll have a sip.
I'm excited to try sock water. I have never ever thought that I was going to drink something called sock water.
The oak is kind of like an added bonus in it. We tried for a Yingling clone, and I thought it was just a bit bare. So we soaked some oak chips in Elijah Craig bourbon and drained the bourbon back out, which after you drain the bourbon, you get one awesome shot of really oaky, smooth booze. And then the chips went in for 3 or 4 weeks.
3 or 4 weeks. Okay, cool deal. All right, well, let's try it. Oh, wow. The smell is incredible. That is super drinkable.
Oh, yeah. We've actually toned back the
oak. I would have never thought about like oak aging a American light lager. I mean, it makes sense, but, you know, this is really, really like, as the dude bros say, crushable.
Crushable. No, that's
The color is gorgeous, and the clarity is also like super clear. I'm really impressed with this.
The clarity comes from Dave, the head brewer at Mason Jar Lager Company. We toured their facility with my brew club, Half Brewers, Half Drinkers, and we asked him what the biggest caveat of his place was. What's something you do that makes your beer stand out? And he said, "We lager everything for at least 30 days. So all of my lagers go into, you know, 35, 40 degree cold crash for at least 30 days.
Are you using any fining agents?
Usually no.
Okay. Wow, that's impressive.
Once in a while, like for the really, really light beers, I'll add a little bit of gelatin to the keg just to drop everything out of it. And the first two pours are just, yuck, throw those away. But the rest of it comes out sparkling. So this one has no fining agents at all in it.
Yeah, and the bourbon character is just like very subtle. So I like that it's subtle, especially for an American light lager. Like you want that base style is literally all you want is just something that is like a lawnmower beer. Like you want to be able to crush it down, sip it, and, you know, be able to have multiple. So I like that you can get that bourbon character, but also still be able to enjoy a decent amount.
I think this one's like a 6.5. Not really a lawnmower beer, but still definitely crushable. Yeah, good stuff.
Awesome. So you said your glycol chiller is a piece of equipment that you can't live without. What is the biggest mistake that you've made? You know, what is the one mistake that you remember and it just like turned to absolute crud?
So the first few brews... I enjoyed watching the CO2 escape through the airlock.
Mm-hmm.
And when the CO2 bubbles would stop coming out, I would grab the bucket and swirl it around very, very violently and wait for the bubbles. And if they didn't come out, I would take the lid off and look in there like the yeast is going to wake up because I'm staring at it or something, and then close it back up and swirl it around again. And you get cardboard beer. It's awful. I still drank the cardboard beer, though.
Yeah, you still drink. I will have to say that I've had a couple of cardboard beers myself. More specifically, when I was first starting out with bottling, like that was one of the issues that I had. What is your advice now that you have had plenty of oxygenated beer. What is your advice now on how to mitigate that?
Do not touch it. Once it starts bubbling, even if it stops, just let it do its thing. If you've got a schedule from a recipe, follow the schedule. If it says it's going to quit in a week and it quits in 5 days, that's fine. No problem. Now you got 2 more days to age. No big deal. And when you transfer, if you use a secondary, when you transfer, if you have the means, flood your new vessel with CO2 to chase out any oxygen and eliminate that as much as possible.
How would you suggest the best way of going about flooding the new vessel with CO2?
So if I were using a carboy as a secondary, I would take my CO2 can and turn the regulator to about 5 to 7 PSI and put the hose into the bottom of the carboy. Turn the gas on, wait 2 or 3 minutes. The CO2 is heavier than oxygen, so it will run all the oxygen out and fill itself up with CO2, and you're not putting your beer into an oxygenated atmosphere after that.
Awesome. Awesome. So do you use secondary fermentation all that often, or are you primarily, like for your pilot batch, for example, are you, you know, just in your 5 gallon bucket, are you moving it over to a secondary?
If it's an ale, I will do it all in the 5 gallon bucket. If it's a lager, like I said, I'll throw it in the fridge and leave it for a month. So it will go into a carboy after the primary fermentation's over.
Understood. Very cool. Well, what have you brewed recently that you're proud of? I mean, I know that we just tried that lager that was absolutely incredible, but what is your favorite beer that you've brewed?
So we talked about the Pliny clone that Vinny at Russian River was so nice to give to me. I've modified that, used some newer hop varieties, some Huel Melon and some Galena in places of more standard hops like Simcoe, and made it pretty much my own recipe. Ended up adding triticale to it, and it's got a really good mouthfeel. It's very hoppy, but not obnoxiously hoppy. Anybody can enjoy it if they like an IPA. And that beer also got a kid's name. I was drinking Lord Hobo's IPA, and my daughter said, "Dad, what kind of beer is that?" And I said, "It's an IPA." And the next week, I was making the Russian River clone, and she said, "What kind of beer is that?" And I said, "It's going to be an IPA." And she said, "Oh, like that Hobo Party beer." So the West Coast IPA is now named Hobo Party. We've got can art for that one. That's so cool looking.
So you mentioned can art. So do you can any of your beers?
We haven't canned anything yet. And we use an AI algorithm to make our art. The free Wombo one that everybody plays with. Several different styles of drawing, but we got one out of that was really cool. It's like looks like a bunch of homeless guys around a campfire passing a brown paper bag. I was like, yeah, that's a hobo party.
That does sound like a hobo party. So you said we, and you mean Pocket Creek Brewing.
Give us
an update as to what's going on with Pocket Creek, and you know, not just an update, but like tell us what's going on.
Okay, so presently we've got beer on tap at Wild Dogs Brewing in Sanford. We were a guest brewer there. We're looking at 2 or 3 properties in the Sanford area. One of them is awesome, but it costs way too much.
Most of them do.
Yes, the other two are okay, and one of them has had 2 failed businesses in it in the last year, but the rent is wonderful. So I'm going to contact that gentleman this week and see what I can do about getting in there. The strategy we're going to use is, we're going to go kind of like Bond Brothers did, and we're going to manufacture and distribute the beer locally, you know, to anybody who will take a keg from us before we open a tap room. Try to get the name out there, and, we've got a few ideas in the line, but right now we're stuck at getting the situation of our brewing space taken care of, because I don't want to order a big system and have to leave one of my fermenters outside because it didn't fit, but I don't want to order a small system and go, wow, I could have went so much bigger because it's a huge area. So that's the next big step, is to get the space. We've got a couple investors with us. After we have the space, we're going to talk with the investors, find out specifically what they're down to invest, and take that, parlay it into a business loan, and order our equipment at that time.
Awesome. Well, that sounds like a lot of work that you still have to get done. But I mean, you know, you've put a lot of time and energy into this, so I'm sure it'll be awesome. All right. Well, my next question for you, you know, we, part of this reason for this podcast is specifically to, you know, reach out and provide experience and knowledge towards new homebrewers. So, what is a piece of advice that you have for new homebrewers or folks interested in getting into fermentation, period?
The best advice I would give somebody that wants to start brewing at home would be to start small. You know, the regular 5-gallon starter
extract.
Kit. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Extracts, kits that you can purchase here or anywhere else that sells beer making equipment and supplies. Follow your recipes. Document what you have done. If you went a little bit over on the water, write down you went a little bit over on the water. If you fermented for an extra 3 days, write it down, because you never know when that beer is going to come out stellar. And if you don't have step-by-step instructions on what you've done, you'll never get that back.
How would you recommend storing that information? Like, I've seen some people with, you know, they just write it down in a notebook. I've seen some people go as crazy as to have it actually like documented in like a Google folder or whatever. What was
so
it that
I've
you
I've started using Brewer's Friend. Mm-hmm. You can get it for free, but you get so many more bells and whistles if you pay the, I think it was $9 a year or something like that. I started out with the notebook, which you can never find when you need it, and you never write things down when you do them, so you're kind of having to remember. This is in your phone, so it's with you all the time, and it's easy to pull it out of your pocket and go click, 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 click. Okay, that's in there, and next time you go back, it's like, here's what you did last time, and you can go, oh, yeah, I forgot that part, and it really, really helps out. The phone-based ones are where I would go, because it's just so convenient, and you've always got your phone. You're never without it.
Yeah, unless you're like me and you drop it on the concrete homebrew store floor.
Oh.
Yeah, that happened to me a couple of months ago. And, you know, here in the shop, we all communicate using Teams. And it was very interesting trying to communicate to people without a cell phone.
That would be very, very interesting, yes.
So you had mentioned Half Brewers, Half Drinkers, and that's a local homebrew club. Tell us about Half Brewers, Half Drinkers.
So when I decided I was seriously going to brew beer, I wanted some other information besides just what I could read online and make up in my own head. And I did a little research and found out that a homebrew club is someplace you can meet with like-minded people once or twice a month. Our group meets at a different local brewery every month. We plan interesting events. We did axe throwing one night. I'm actually the secretary for the club now. But it's nice to be able to take a couple beers out and have people who will actually be critical of the beer and tell you exactly what, you know, what they think about it. Because mm-hmm. like I said earlier, you know, your friends will tell you, oh, this is great. This is wonderful. Yeah, and it's not. And that doesn't help you dial it in at anywhere. But the homebrew clubs are a lot of fun. I dabble with Raleigh Homebrewing also. And
Raleigh Homebrewers Association?
Yes, RHBA. Everybody I've met in either of the clubs is really great people. I haven't met any hard to hang out with people so far. And it's like the camaraderie thing, and you can share ideas, you can bounce ideas off people. Have you ever tried this? Oh, don't do that. That's going to make this happen. And
right.
You know, hey, I've had this problem. What do you know about that? Oh, well, you need to do this and this and this to figure that out. And it's really been, as much as a social island, it's a real wealth of information at the same time, because everybody there, the half brew, half drink club, half the people there brew, half just drink. But the people that drink enjoy good beer. And if you bring them a good beer, they're going to tell you. And if you bring them some mop water, they're going to go, ew, that's gross. What'd you do?
And then everyone else will tell you, well, here's what he did wrong.
Yes, yes. And you'll get the beer snobs in there that will go, oh, well, you must have used this hop and this hop, and I taste this in there. And did you use this kind of yeast? And a lot of times they're right, and you're going to go, yep, you got it, dude, darn.
Can't fool you. Yeah, I've actually been to a couple of half brewers, half drinkers meetings, because I happen to live in the same area that they hold a lot of their meetings, and the folks there are a lot of fun to, you know, not just talk beer with, but also to hang out with. And I've always felt really welcomed at their clubs because even before I, you know, was homebrewing on a regular basis, I really enjoyed being able to go to that club and, you know, get inspiration from other people to actually get started into the hobby.
Oh, yeah.
And that's one of the things that I would recommend to just about anybody even considering getting into the hobby is, you know, actually go to one of these homebrew clubs, taste some homebrew, and you'll realize, wow, actually, I can make really good beer at home. And that I think that ultimately is probably what kicked it off for me because I'm just a, you know, social extrovert that to the point where I'm willing
Same.
To.
Yeah.
Well, let's go ahead and try another one of your beers. You had mentioned that you had a stout. Do you think it's up to temp now?
Sure. Why not?
Yeah. Is it this one?
That is the stout.
Right. I'll go ahead and open this.
The darkest of the dark beers.
All right. Well, tell us about this stout.
Okay. This is a barrel aged Russian Imperial Stout.
Mm-hmm.
When we were testing out our first labels, my brew partner said, "What's the name of this beer?" And I said, "It doesn't have a name." And he translated "no name" into Russian, and it came up as Bez Imenya, which doesn't mean I don't have a name. It's like the great value stuff at Walmart. It's the no-name brand. So this is Bez Imenya. It won an award 3 or 4 years ago at the Shamrock Open, and that's where I met you. That is where I met you.
Oh, yeah, Shamrock. Yeah. I was judging at Shamrock.
Yep. I got a third place for smoked and barrel-aged beers, or smoked and wood-aged beers.
Oh, that's right. You won, and so I had to leave, and I went to work, and I didn't hear the results or anything, and you came in, like, beaming
with a
shit-eating grin on your face.
And holding that ribbon up. Look what I got.
Yeah. I remember that. Wow. Holy cow, that's been a hot minute.
Yep. We've improved on it since then. All the judges at that competition said it needed more malt. So anything with the word malt in the recipe, I just doubled. That's more.
With the same amount of brewing water?
Yes.
Wow.
We use a rye barrel to age this. It is very alcoholic. This is 12.4%. Yes.
Holy cow. Well, I mean, I'm smelling it and it smells boozy, but I mean, I'm really getting a lot of that like rye barrel characteristic on it. I mean,
one of the biggest tricks to this is because it's so alcoholic. A lot of people will barrel age or wood age a beer and leave the booze in it, and you end up with a little burn in the back of your throat. And I think barrel aging for 3 or 4 months really kills that burn. I don't want that burn in there at all. I want it to be smooth and warm you up a little bit, but not burn the back of your throat.
Yeah, I could definitely sit next to a bonfire and enjoy this at the end of an evening. Hopefully not an evening of a bunch of drinking, because that would probably be a mistake with as high.
This is a one and done kind of beer.
But it's absolutely gorgeous. The aroma on it is just like really present. And, you know, that's one of the things that I found even in a homebrew. It's really difficult to get aroma to actually come through and be perceivable. But you do not have that problem at all.
This beer is actually last year's batch. This is a year old.
Wow.
Yeah. And it's been cold preserved for that entire time.
Well, the head on it too. I mean, it's lasting. And it's just like this gorgeous, you know, tan colored head. And I wish you guys could see this beer. It's super gorgeous. And it's got those nice like ruby highlights. Really fantastic job on this one. I love a good barrel aged Imperial Stout, but a lot of them can be like way too hot. And even though this one's boozy, it's not so boozy up front that it feels like you're just going to pass out from alcohol poisoning.
But it will do it.
Which is probably why it's really dangerous. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for bringing this in. I am thoroughly enjoying this.
I'm glad you enjoy that one. That's one of the flagship beers. That and the Hobo Party are the two that I enjoy brewing the most. The Hobo Party has a... I wish I had some of that to bring with me today, but I drank it all.
Oh no, you drank your own homebrew.
Yes.
What a sad state of
affairs. You know the question that I get from people that are interested in homebrewing all the time that I just have to laugh about is, do you save money by making your own beer?
Oh no. Yeah, I mean, you can, but I mean, ultimately, once you get into this hobby, it's more of an enjoyment. It's a craft. You know, you're doing this because you enjoy making it and because you enjoy doing it. And, you know, one of the things that I've told people, even if they're worried as to whether or not they made a bad beer or made a beer truest to style, is like, first of all, did you enjoy making it? And second of all, did you enjoy drinking it? If you can answer both to that question, then you are a home brewer.
There you go. That is it.
And if other people enjoyed drinking it too, awesome.
That's one of the caveats that I really enjoy is if I break out a new beer and people drink it and go, wow, that's amazing. I'm like, yay. It makes my head swell a little bit and really makes me want to do it more and better next time.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, homebrewing is one of the hobbies that I think I enjoy the most because there is something that there's never something that I can't learn, right?
Exactly.
I mean, even with being the store manager here, I'm still learning every single day about what I can do. I mean, I just used Philly sour yeast for the first time. And
what did you think?
So I actually really like it. I know that a lot of people are kind of weird about it, but I really enjoyed what I made. I did a rye sour. So it's funny because my store associate Joel and I, he and I were sitting down and we said, okay, we've got all of the online orders done. What do we want to do for the rest of the day? And I'm going, well, we kind of need to put some beer in a keg. So let's brew. And you know, he's like, well, what do you want to make? And I'm going, well, I really, really want to make something with rye because I had just finished up a rye pale ale that I absolutely loved.
I like rye a lot.
And, you know, it's funny because my fiance won't let me have rye beer on tap at home because he doesn't like rye. And so I'm going, okay, I just need more taps. Yeah. Well, I have two at home. And if I have any more, I will run out of space. But essentially I wanted to make something with rye at work because I couldn't have it at home. And I was also like, man, I haven't used this Philly sour yeast and everyone's been talking to me about it. I wonder how a rye sour would go. And I know it sounds like super weird.
It sounds weird, yes.
It is super weird. Maybe I'll have to, you know, let you try it later. But what we did was we thought about it as if you were to take bullet rye bourbon and then make a whiskey sour out of it.
That's good. Yeah.
So we ended up adding peach and apricot puree to it. And then we took some bottles and essentially put some of the oat cubes into them. You were here for that.
I was here. I helped with that.
Yeah, you were. You helped break down the oat cubes so that way we could fit them into the bottles. So yeah, I mean, it ended up turning out really, really well. And the tartness of it is incredibly pleasant. And yet you still get like that, you know, spice character from the tetanang that's in it. And it goes really well with the rye. I don't know. It sounds weird, but it turned out great. So
there's a lot of beers out there that sound weird, but they're really good.
Yeah.
And I've been afraid to try a sour in my system because I've heard and read a lot about once you do a sour, everything is sour after that. Kind of like if you change the oil in your fryer and then fry some perch and tomorrow you fry chicken wings, your chicken wings taste like fish, kinda.
Oh yeah.
And exactly. Then I'm gonna cook some tater tots, but they taste like fish, kind of.
Yeah, so that's one of the things that I really liked about the Philly sour yeast was that it is a lactic acid producing yeast and it also already has saccharomyces in it. So it doesn't really do much to there's not much that it can do to infect your system. So you should try it.
I'm definitely putting it on the list.
One of our other store associates that works here seasonally, her name is Lottie. Lottie actually made a cherry sour beer and she called it Cheery Sour.
Oh,
which
cool.
Makes so much sense for Lottie because she's so cheery.
She is fun, you know? Yes.
So once she used it, I was like, okay, now I have to do it. You know? it's beer pressure.
Oh, good. I love that.
Beer pressure. It's beer pressure.
I love that. I'm going to use that.
So I am beer pressuring you to try and use the Philly Sour Yeast.
It's working. It's totally working.
Awesome. So to end this podcast, I would like to ask you this random question. And you can think about it for a second, but don't take too long. If you were a beer, what would you be?
If I were a beer, I would be a very bitter IPA, and I would walk around like I was God, even though nobody really liked me.
So you're talking about all of the hipsters that love IPAs.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. Okay, so we need to get you a beanie and
I've
a
got
vest
some of those.
And some Vans.
Yeah, I got those
like
too.
Kind of like our producer Matt over here. Oh, he's even wearing like the glasses that.
Oh, he's got the hipster glasses.
The,
yes,
got the hipster glasses going on. Cool deal. Well, thank you so much for, you know, sharing with us and bringing these delicious beers. I really appreciate you being our guinea pig today.
It's been my pleasure. I've really enjoyed this. Thank
awesome.
You.
Well, maybe we'll have you back.
Hopefully. Yeah. Let's do that after a while.
Yeah. Like when you open up Pocket Creek.
That sounds wonderful. Yes.
Time to do it.
I'm still shopping here, no matter what.
Excellent. All right, guys. Well, thank you so much for listening. This has been the Atlantic Brew Supply Podcast. This is Kat Pierce, your host.